The Fable and Folly Network supports creators of exceptional audio stories, including the one you're listening to right now. If you love our shows, we want to hear from you. Complete our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey. This will help us learn more about you, what you like, what you'd like to hear more of, and how we can maintain an inclusive, safe atmosphere. As a thank you for your participation, we have extras and behind-the-scenes content from your favorite shows. Fans make the network what it is. Thanks for listening, and we can't wait to hear from you. Find our listener survey at fableandfolly.com/survey today.
Well, hi, everybody. How's it going?
Oh, hello.
Great.
So good.
Hi.
We are all here at the table.
I love it.
It's a good time.
Oh, no.
I hope that it will stay a good time.
Oh, no.
Look at the look on his face.
But it may not.
I'm so excited to be here for this specifically.
Our community manager, Mr. Mike, Mike the Mad, has...
I like Mr. Mike.
Mr.
I've never
Mike.
Called him Mr. Mike, but it sounds like a 90s film.
Has sent us a gift in the honor of us trying things on mic for the intro.
How thoughtful. Oh, geez.
That is a big bag.
It is a big bag. Five different kinds of candy.
Oh, geez.
One of those, as it came out of the bag, that one specifically, it's got little like white and pink and stuff and then like dark. I thought it was like a pair of socks in a bag. Like I thought it was a polka dots pair of socks wadded up in a bag. And I was like, oh, that's an odd addition.
So what all do we have here, Rev?
So these all have different names. He heard us talking about our love of black licorice.
Oh.
Well, I'm familiar.
My love of black licorice.
So some of these, we have mint buttons.
That sounds harmless.
Okay.
Yeah. We have Rockies.
I don't know what that is.
We have Hexley Salty. I know Megan likes one of those words.
Go on.
Double salt.
All right.
And lastly, nostalgia.
Oh, that sounds awful.
I'm horrified.
So which of these do we want simply by the name?
I want to end on mint buttons.
Yeah. That's fair. That's probably
like that's
a good
be
idea.
A safe bet.
Okay.
I want to start. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's try the Hexley.
Okay. The Hexley Salty.
Hexley.
And it is. I should have pre-opened these. It kind of smells like chocolate, which is what he said to me.
You sniffed it like a bag of tobacco.
You're all sniffing it. Tass looks not thrilled.
You got to go in nose blind.
That's true. That's true. That probably would be beneficial.
Actually, that is a powerful scent coming out of that bag, so I didn't sniff it and I still got it.
I think the thing that's going to jar me the most is that this candy is covered in crystallization, and I'm expecting sweet, and it's going to be salty.
It's going to be salty. It smells like a mocha.
Are we doing like a 3-2-1 situation?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
3-2-1. Yep.
That's, oh my God.
That's awful.
I like it.
Oh, yeah. That is just actual black licorice with hint of something
that's
else.
That's god awful.
Would you like the rest of the, I took a very tiny bite and spit it out immediately.
I did it. I finished it, but at what cost?
Yeah, oh no. Boy, at what cost?
I wonder if we should. I wonder if we should test a mint button now,
so that we know if we can we palate cleanse in between.
Can they
rounds?
Be aperitifs?
I'll try a mint button. Okay, I'll do that first.
Okay, here you go.
If this is black licorice,
I'll do that for you.
And mint, that is like the double worst candy that I could ever imagine.
It doesn't say anything about it
except that they are all Dutch licorice brand.
That's true.
Oh no!
I think this experiment may be over before it started.
Kim, what do you think from someone that likes black licorice?
I've never seen Jake go so dead-eyed so fast.
I don't mind it.
I'm so glad. I am so relieved for you.
I'm so glad that we can put all of this with you. We can send all this with you.
I'm the only one here that's having a good time.
We should wash this down with some Jägermeister.
This is why we waited for Kim to be here, though, because we knew she would.
Oh,
I watched Rev just sniff that bag and almost fold.
What's that one called?
It is called Rockies.
Okay.
And they're filled with pink and yellow in the middle.
Yeah, what's
pink and yellow?
Sorry, pink and
Kim,
pink
tell
and
me eat that. Tell me what's modifying the black licorice so I know if I'm remotely willing to try it.
Okay.
I'm so
Oh, it's good. This one has like a raspberry fill.
I'm going to give me one and I'm going to see if I can squeeze the raspberry fill out of the middle.
This is my favorite so far.
Honestly, those ones do not taste very much like black licorice.
They just kind of taste like licorice. Rev took a tiny bite and then put it aside.
Immediately spit it back out.
I'm trying to join Jake here in peeling the raspberry.
Ooh,
I got
did
the
it.
Core clean out.
I've almost got mine.
Yeah?
It tastes like a Tums.
Oh, can I have one? Does. I would love a Tums right now.
I don't think it's going to help you like a Tums.
Okay, so you got two choices. Kay. Nostalgia or double salt.
I feel like I want to save nostalgia for last.
Yeah, I'll let you open this one.
Okay.
What is nostalgia
I'll let you open this one
like.
While I write a nasty letter to Mike. I'm going to see him this weekend. He's going to get his comeuppance.
Mike is giving me no reasons to trust him. Mike has given me several reasons not to in the last...
Specifically, yes.
Yeah, in the last 7 days.
So I'm interested in this one because it's not salty on the outside at all, which tells me that maybe it's on the inside.
Same.
Oh, yeah. You guys will not like this. This is extremely salty black licorice.
I got to say, though, we're giving Mike some shit. But out of fairness, here is what happened. Here's the actual literal order of events. Us... We hate black licorice. Mike sends us black licorice. Us, I guess we'll eat it.
Let's like, consume the black licorice.
This is not yeah. really his fault. Yeah.
No, I don't accept that. It's his fault because, of course, he sent it to us. Of course, we have to eat it. It's the courteous thing to do. He foisted it upon us with Midwestern manners.
He's going to make it up to me, though, because I'm going to visit him this weekend, and we're going to do the Cincinnati Donut Trail.
Bring me some.
Yeah. Here's the last one. This is nostalgia.
I like that they're penny farthing bicycles.
Yeah, they sure are. Oh, it's like a hard candy.
Oh, it's very hard.
Okay. All right, let's try one.
Oh, a very hard licorice. We're getting really good Kim chewing ASMR. This better not.
Normally you have to pledge a very high tier on the Patreon.
Yeah, this better not awaken anything in me.
So these ones don't really taste like anything to me.
Yeah, it really doesn't have a taste. I'm chewing on the tire of one.
Tires famously.
Just like childhood.
Give me one of those. I'll do a nibble on that.
Which is weird because it still smells greatly of it, but it doesn't taste like it.
So I think my favorite one was the Rockies, one that had like the fruit filling.
One of them is like a little growler instead of a penny farthing bite. Oh, there's sewing machines in here? What is this?
It's like an old-timey like street light lantern.
This one, that tasted more like root beer than black licorice. So just all of Tass's nightmare.
Yeah. Yeah, all in one place.
And then, yeah, there's like an oil lamp.
I think I'd rather drink the oil.
Or like a street lamp called Desire.
So thank you, Mike, for that.
Yeah, thanks,
Mike.
We'll see how much of that is audible. Just a reminder that if you are going to be at Gen Con and you would like to join us for our meetup and our live show, right across the street at the Indiana Repertory Theater. You can go to thecritshowpodcast.com/GenCon to sign up. It is limited seating, so if you'd like to join, make sure you RSVP very soon because we are running out of spaces. We hope that you enjoy the Q&A for Season 3, and we will see you next week with the beginning of Season 4. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Season 3 Q&A. And welcome to all of the folk around the table. How's it going, everybody?
Hey!
You good. Hit a pitch that is usually only audible to dogs. Oh. Yeah, that got way up there.
How's it going, everybody?
Woo!
Well, let's see what kind of questions we have got.
I'm excited.
So this question is for everybody. Do you find that switching games but keeping the same overarching story can get confusing? If so, how do you combat it?
I mean, kind of for my brain, because I'm just so bad at keeping mechanics in my head, but like not enough that it is detrimental to what we're doing, or like, I don't know, it's not a bad thing. It's so much fun. And the way to combat that for me is, you know, I start to say and do the wrong thing and you all go, no. So yeah, it's pretty
very active combating.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's a real best offense is a good defense kind of combating. Yeah.
I can't tell if the implication in this question is that switching games and not keeping the same overarching story might be less confusing. Like, it's definitely less confusing not also having to change stories.
Oh, I think if it was just like a big series of like one shots would be different stories and different games.
I think that would be harder to keep. Maybe, I don't know.
No, I get the idea of like, oh, you're keeping the same story, but you're switching games, because if you're playing a story, you kind of have that story in your mind and you have your moveset in your mind. So when you're coming up to situations, you kind of have this idea already in your head of what to look out for because of something you might do. So the idea of switching a new game but being within the same story, you do have to kind of keep in mind like, oh, wait, shit, no, I can't do that here. And that happens at the table definitely where that literally exact same sentence is said of like, oh, wait, nope, that doesn't make sense anymore. Then I have to stop and say what my actual move is now.
Yeah, but you all do prep for that, right? I mean, I know at least for the Sprawl and for Dungeon World, you all did kind of trial games to get familiar with the new system.
Yeah, as part of our session zero, we always do a one shot of the system we're getting ready to play.
Yeah, it's kind of nice because, I mean, there are certainly some things like very specific moves and stuff that we might lose and then pick up. But like, that's kind of the fun of it is justifying now that we're here, why does it work this way? So that can be fun and silly and interesting. And luckily enough, Powered by the Apocalypse games are just similar enough that we can find those things that are like, oh, this is like the closest equivalent to that. That's why it makes sense that I can do it, but not exactly the same way.
Yeah, because really, if we butcher anything in the session zero, it's moves or elements unique to that game.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, I mean, we have our move sets and everything for this new system in front of us at the table. So as we're playing through this game, we're following the story. We have that story in our head, so we can look down and kind of see like, this is the situation we're in now. So I don't find it too difficult to follow along.
I have a question for Rev.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not for me, but you know.
Are you trying to steal this person's question?
I absolutely
am.
Oh,
no.
How many of the alternate universes do you have planned out versus make up as the crew chooses to go somewhere? Is there the chance of them accidentally traveling somewhere?
The universes are, like, it would be impossible for me to just be like, okay, now you guys are here because we all have to know the game.
Right.
So that's the only element. Like, whenever we pick a new game and we play a new game, everybody at the table knows what that game is, usually before the characters do, because we have started to prep playing that game, but they don't know the world. Like, they don't know what environment they'll be coming into X game at, the X games at.
Oh, no.
Yes, can that please be, yes, the next the world X we
can't wait for the X Games universe?
With the exception of the time that we went back to Dungeon World. That was just like, I went, oh, here's your playbooks. We're back in Dungeon World.
Yeah.
So there was no prep needed for that. But yes, the worlds and the games are planned ahead of time.
Was Megan in the audience for the Florida Man live show at Gen Con? I'm pretty sure I can hear her laugh on the recording.
Yeah, I was there. I was front row. I was front row, center of that row, ready, excited. It was great. It was funny. I laugh. I have a very distinct laugh. It was me. Yeah.
Laughing directly into a microphone.
Yeah. Might have gotten more sound on the mic than some of us at the table.
But that was because that was the episode where TJ was holding his microphone out randomly to the audience.
No, actually, I would run up
and just
to the table and laugh into Tass's microphone and then go sit back down. I have a question for Rev. What were some of the more interesting monsters in Nash's prison?
I didn't have a lot of them planned out, but there was a Gorgon because like we'd only seen like a fake Gorgon. So I knew that there was a real Gorgon in Nash's prison. And then there was also a couple of gargoyles, which at the time we had not encountered gargoyles yet.
Nice.
But other than that, I didn't want to generate a bunch of monsters because I have no idea who you're going to interact with.
Yeah, that's fair. Gorgon. That's cool.
Now, I did put my friend Brad in that world.
Mm.
What kind of monster was he?
You tell me. Like, what kind of monster would he be?
Oh, geez. I don't
fucking eviscerate Brad right now.
I was like, I don't think I can answer this question, actually.
All right. This next question is for Rev. The Grampire Megan storyline is
Vampa.
Vampa? Look, this says Grampire, so we're going with it.
But every time that question comes, or anything regarding that character comes up in the Discord and somebody says Grampire, Tass is always right there to just correct them and go Vampa. And if they say Vampa, he'll be like Grampire.
That's exactly what happened at the table every time it was said too.
All right. The Vampa Megan storyline is full of such lovely, wibbly wobbly, timey wimey stuff.
Grampire.
Ignore what he's doing. We are totally with you.
I feel like I'm being hazed. So much so, in fact, that I'm not sure I followed all its twists and turns. Could you do a step-by-step chronological walkthrough of all the time-hopping shenanigans involving Grandpa Nash and Megan?
Okay.
Wow, Rev, where did this whiteboard come from?
So not step-by-step, but yes. So in the timeline that Nash had lived through, he had succeeded in his goal. The world was all turned into monsters. Megan was his chosen, and together they kind of led the world. And then humanity, what was left of them, attacked and just annihilated everything. As Megan, who had tried to defend a huge portion of the city with her powers from the bombs, as she died, Nash realized that, you know, getting to know her, getting to know this human, it had changed him. He made a promise to her that he would try to fix things. And he used a spell that he had been studying to throw himself back in time. He threw himself back in time to when Megan was much younger, and it took him directly to Megan in the timeline that we now live in. Because again, with time travel, we are dealing with the ideas that we are taught in Back to the Future and things like that, where it is time is a river. If you go back and you change something about the river, it flows in a different direction. We're not making a multiverse here. We have a multiverse in a completely other way. Trying to figure out how to adjust the timeline, he realizes he can't get too close to his present self because it creates huge chaotic magic. So he leaves a notebook inside of the igloo for TJ and the guys to find. His hope was that them finding and being able to unlock Noelle would be enough to change things. But obviously, that was not the case. And so now this old Nash is living through this timeline, trying to figure out what adjustments he can make to foil the plans of his current timeline version.
Yeah, that I think that hit it all.
Okay.
You looked concerned. Well, I think that was good.
I'm so used to it that I don't know if it makes sense to anybody else.
Yeah, fair.
All right, Rev, we know now that Nash is tied to Megan's backstory, but before you knew Megan was going to be on the show, was it always a plan to tie Nash into whoever the newest cast member was, or was that something that worked out with Megan's specific character? That was something that was very specific to Megan's character. Did we talk about that at your or directly after your audition?
It was a little bit. I got cast, and then it was a while, obviously, before I showed up in the story. Yeah. So there was a bit of, you know, figuring out, okay, how exactly am I going to fit in here? Because, I mean, you guys knew that you wanted somebody new in, and then it was like, okay, well, what is that going to look like? And yeah. Rev and I threw around a couple of ideas, and that was maybe some options of, like, this might happen. But it wasn't actually kind of concrete, because it was an idea, and I kind of was like, oh, okay, well, like, how would I do that? And I think I got, like, a little nervous, and Rev kind of noted that, and he was just like, actually, don't worry about it. Like, that might be what it is, but
yeah,
like,
you'll know in the moment if it is.
Yeah, because I mean, as a player in general, I don't like spoilers. I want to know what my character knows, because then I'm not as good of an actress, so I can more authentically react and experience the story in the game based on what my character knows. And so he was just like, this, like, going into the story, these are the few things that you know about just who you are as a person.
Yeah.
And if we kind of go that direction, like, you'll know in the moment. Yeah.
Yeah. And we kind of tracked the ideas to make sure that it fit. And then at that point went, okay, so this might be used. It may not. Let's not worry about it right now. But we do know if we decide to use it that the footprints match up with the path that needs to be walked. So yeah, it was specific to Megan's character because of the whole community and grandpa element. Made it an interesting way to connect him into that community. I'm trying to think of what some of the, because we did throw around a couple different options.
Yeah, we definitely had the idea that I was Lana and Anastasia's daughter.
Yes, that's right.
But we decided against that. We thought maybe that was a little much for Anastasia to lose her wife and then also have lost her daughter.
Yeah.
And yeah, we just kind of established some facts of, like, where I'm from, what I can do, how that started, and how I got to the point where the boys found me. And I didn't know where that was going to be or what that was going to look like, but I knew that I was going to have manifested these powers. Something happened to make them go out of control. I would have left home in search of answers. And then that was kind of it. I didn't know anything up to the point of when I was actually found.
Yeah. This is one, actually, I think we kind of answered, which is next, is how much of Megan's character/backstory was planned ahead of time versus improvised during play, for example, her abilities, her connection to Nash, and how she joined the party.
Yeah, the backstory, the connection to Nash was a possibility, like you said, I didn't know that was for sure where we were going until the moment we went to Hawaii and we're watching the memory, and Rev just kind of looked at me like,
da 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 da. You see Nash.
This is gonna happen.
Yeah.
He held up the one single finger, and she snapped her fingers, and it's great.
But as far as when I actually came into the story, I did not know anything about the pocket dimension. We actually, like, my very first day, sat down for a recording, and I was still in South Dakota at the time, so I'm in my closet, I'm, like, super nervous. I had my laptop open, and I was going, and Rev kind of did the intro to the episode where the boys are in Margaritaville, and you walk up to the door and knock, and Megan, you know, like, there's this knock at your door. What do you do? And I'm like, what door? Like, I don't know where I am, like, anything about the scenario. And he went, stop your recording. Like, that's right. I should probably fill you in just, like, a little bit here. Like, and then we just kind of went through a, like, where do you work? It's like, yeah, I work at a pet grooming salon just in this town. Like, I have a house and everything. And that's basically it. You do your day. What does your day-to-day life look like? And it was like, yeah, I go to work, and then I go meet up with my friend Brad for drinks, and they go home. And I didn't know that it was a time loop.
Yeah.
So he was just like, all right, that's what you know.
Yeah.
That was really nice from just the complete sideline perspective, too, of, like, meeting a character and trying to get to know her in character, and her having absolutely no idea what was going on any more than the rest of us. So it really did put us all on the same footing of solving this mystery, which is really tough to do when a character is interjected into an established story, because, I mean, it's almost expected that you have to know a certain amount of things to be able to be quote unquote caught up with the story. But what a cool way to be like, no, you don't. You don't need to know any of this. You're in now. Let's hit the ground running. And so that was a bizarre and interesting way to interact with her and learn about who she was. I love that.
It's definitely preferable for me as well, as a player of, like, cool, I don't know anything. That would have been very difficult for me, I think, a little bit as a player and as a fan of the show, having listened to everything up to that point, to then remember, like, oh, I don't know about that. I was able to kind of go forward from that point and just say, like, oh, I haven't heard that name yet, so I don't know who that is, so I'm going to ask about it. And we were able to kind of do a little bit of a recap as the story went on.
I'm going to do this question as well, because it's along those same lines. You talked about how originally there was a third cast member who's going to be joining at the same time as Megan, and then wasn't able to join. That changed where the boys found Megan. What was the reason for shifting to the Pocketverse instead of bringing Kim in at the same time? So again, this kind of element of bringing Megan in, you know, we talked about before that Josh wasn't able to join at the last minute because of scheduling conflicts. And we had actually recorded, gosh, two or three of his episodes with Megan. I think we can talk about this because it, you know, obviously we have moved well past that point in the plot. But Megan being brought in and Josh being brought in had a very different story. Season two originally ended with Jake and Tass teleporting away from the North Pole, and then snow falling in silence, and then the sounds of two pairs of feet walking in the snow, and it was Josh and Megan, and they would have had a very small conversation about, like, it seems like they're gone already. Yeah, it was too late. We'll have to keep looking for them. And then the break between season two and three would have been, I think it was six episodes, three story arcs, one where Josh and Megan met, one where Josh and Megan had an adventure, and then at the end of it saw Jake's broadcast from the fight at Monument Circle. And then the final one would have been the mystery that led them up to the point where they have those lines in the North Pole at the end of season two.
Boy, I forgot all about that we were doing like a meeting, jump. Like a 1-2-3 kind of thing. That's right.
And so when Josh wasn't able to do it, it totally reformed the way that I was going to try to bring Megan in, and I didn't want to try to bring Kim in, like, just do what I was going to do with Josh. With,
like,
Kim.
Try to cast me as Josh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that would not have been, like, interesting for Kim, and it wouldn't really have fit. I just would have been like, well, okay, this fits here, and that's not fun, I don't think, for anybody. And we'll talk about Kim's timing here in just a little bit, but that's when I think Megan and I had that conversation of, like, okay, so how are you connected to this world? Who could you be linked to? And then that kind of turned into a whole process that led us down that Nash conversation, and that then, you know, plopped her into the pocket dimension and me knowing her connection to that. And then we'll talk about Kim's joining here in a little bit. We've got some questions about that.
Rev, how did the idea of the Wandering Inn come about?
Oh, man, that was from that packet of Dungeon World environments, the inn that wanders. But for me, Like, I grabbed a hold of that because of Tales from the Floating Vagabond, which is a very old RPG where the whole premise is that there is a bar called the Floating Vagabond that lives out in space, and the front door to it teleports randomly through time and space into other doorways so that any character from history, past, present, or future, fiction, nonfiction, can appear in the bar. So the point of that game is that you play whoever you want to play.
So you could have a team of, like, Abe Lincoln, Wile E. Coyote, and Master Chief.
Yes. I played a game where there was Mr. Magoo, Inspector Gadget, Toe Jam from Toe Jam and Earl, and who was the fourth one? Anyway, but that was the party makeup.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like that's pull a name from a hat kind of game.
Yeah.
For sure. And we got Trog back from it.
That's true.
Rev, in season one, where Lana talks about the storm that was making it hard for her to see the future, was that the same storm created when Nash and Nash were near each other? And did you have time travel Nash in mind that far back?
Yes, and yes. That was the thing that was making it so Lana could not see the future anymore because the future was being changed. So she started having that issue of seeing into the future at the point where that Nash traveled back and started to be physically closer to the other Nash.
Nice.
Rev, when you are describing the wall mural of the spell in Eston's castle, is it the same scene that was shown to the group back in the Funhouse story arc where TJ is being fed apples and writing a complex problem?
It is. It was the same spell. It was the same complex problem.
Man, fuck. I need to listen to this show.
All right. Did TJ ever give an explanation for the letter? The one he left in the mailbox before his identity changed in season one.
He did not. That was just something that he was very adamant about including in the little write-up that he gave me to read there. So, you know, he's dead now. He's taken to his grave.
He's a mystery. The secret died with him.
Yeah, yeah. That little blurb that I read was something that TJ had bullet pointed out.
He told me it was just a shopping list. Like, don't
he just gave it to a stranger. Please get this done.
Crew, how are you feeling about working with Grandpa Tincher without TJ on the show?
I didn't know either of them, so it's fine for me.
is this cast or characters?
It says crew, so maybe cast first?
Fair. Honestly, I mean, mostly it is just, you know, it's dealing with an NPC. So there is that kind of element of... not sadness, but, you know, it's kind of reminiscent to be like, oh, you know, it's TJ's grandpa, but the thought of going into this next season and being able to interact with him, it's a beloved NPC that we got to spend some cool time with and get some good information with. So it's chill. I'm excited.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think once, I'm sure there will be an inevitable conversation about that or something, and I like all of the interactions we do have about TJ, like with all the various NPCs that do ask and like that we have to have this conversation, and I enjoy that. Yeah. And I think this one will probably be pretty good because it's one of the most personal ones yet. But yeah, I mean, Grandpa Tincher was a well-liked NPC regardless, so I'm excited to have him back in the fold.
I'm glad that you enjoy having that conversation because it seems like it was you that got like
every time,
every time.
Yeah. Yep. Every time in season
like
three.
Ori and Trog. Everybody.
Rev, what was the inspiration for bringing Grandpa Tincher for the finale of Other Side of the Coin, and how long was that in the works?
How long did it take you to get him?
Oh, man. Just booked. He was very booked.
He had a lot of other commitments. It was not cheap.
We had to raise enough money on our Patreon to pay his appearance fee.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that was a big question mark. Like, if I am a sim, there was a huge question mark above my head when we found out that TJ had to leave, because I was like, we just spent half a season rescuing his grandfather. What am I going to do with him now? Like, he still needs to be relevant. And so when the plan came to go into the future, those dominoes seemed to fall in my mind. It just made sense that, like, oh, he knew it was going to take him quite a while to find his way back. It makes sense that he is one of the people who is there in the future, especially because his aging is affected by all the dimensions he has traveled to. So it just kind of made sense to me. And I think once we get into season four and learn what he's doing here, it'll make even more sense.
Yeah. Boy, that's a story I want to see, just like I want to see Steve Rogers returning the Infinity Stones. I want to see Grandpa's progression through all these different worlds and timelines to
get home.
Yeah.
His quantum leap life.
Yeah, exactly.
Kim, how has it been recording remotely and in a different time zone?
It's been fine, honestly. At this point, I do most of my thinking in Eastern Standard Time.
God bless her. Because we work with so many people, and not all of them in the same time zone. But from like day one, Kim has always talked to me only in Eastern Time, which is wonderful because the number of nosebleeds I get has cut back significantly.
not completely, but significantly.
Yeah. Yeah, so the time zone thing isn't really a factor. In fact, in many respects, I really like it because I do a lot of performing. I do a lot of working in clubs in Los Angeles. And so wrapping up recording or streaming around 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. for me is fantastic because then I just go right to work. Same thing with Sundays. I usually teach music lessons Sunday morning. So I'm usually up at like 8 a.m. and then teaching until like 11. And then I record with you all from like 11 to 7. It's perfect, actually. Yeah. The remote thing definitely has taken a little bit of adjusting to. It's been a lot of back and forth of Rev and myself figuring out the ideal setup for that, like mailing microphones back and forth and adjusting various audio levels and things like that, because I have to do my own processing and my own monitoring to make sure that everything is recording correctly. And so if something is weird, I have to kind of in the moment troubleshoot it and be like, okay, pause, something strange is going on with my recording. And so that's taken a little bit of adjusting to, just that I can't be completely in the moment at the table. I have to also be checking my other monitor to make sure things are recording okay. But, you know, you learn, you adjust.
Yeah. And I think the in distance in the sense of like the actual playing of the games was something that was new to us locally because we hadn't streamed much when it comes to RPGs. But as soon as we started streaming more and having guests, like now that element of, you know, we have it set up so that Kim is on a big monitor right at the corner of the table. And so it's like she is sitting here at the table. And then we have a microphone in the middle of the table for her to hear all of us. And then she's coming to us through our headphones. It's so funny that, you know, when we were initially holding auditions, out of all of us, I was super hesitant about the idea of distance. But even after the year and a half that we've had, like, it has not affected the quality of things we've been able to capture, which is nice.
Nice. Yeah. And actually, I am recording this right now at the table.
Yeah.
Coincidentally, not dealing with this problem right now.
Coincidentally, I am in person, but because I've been here for the last week and a half recording a bunch of things. And I was initially worried the first time that I sat down to record something that I was going to be really nervous being in person for the first time. And I haven't really noticed any significant change. It feels pretty much the same to me, except now I can reach out and touch you all.
But you can't fiddle with your notebook.
That's true.
Just in your own downtime. That's something
that
everybody. I got used to that just in the month that I was out at my brother's. I got used to just being like, I can do whatever the hell I want if I'm not talking because all this is going away.
That has been the thing. And we just recorded some things earlier today where I'm so used to writing down notes and being on a completely, not even separate audio channel, but a separate room from anyone else. And so I'm like, I'm not talking right now. I can just flip all through my papers. And so Rev was doing some narration and I was flipping a page and he paused and he looked at me and I was like, just so shamefaced.
Yeah, because that's the big thing that you don't realize, I think, is that all of our microphones pick up a little bit of bleed from one another. So if someone is at distance, they have the benefit of, if they're not talking, they can make all the noise they want because that space in the track is just going away. But if that noise is happening under someone else talking, you hear it bleed through.
When I was still recording remotely, I did have the issue of my pages being picked up because I take very detailed notes and I just had a lot of papers everywhere. And Rev absolutely was like, I can hear all your papers moving. And so I actually had a whole setup where I had like my notebook that I would look back on notes on the floor and then a side table next to my chair and then like my microphone out on an arm. So I would lean way over to talk onto my microphone and then lean away like as far as I could from my microphone and like write notes on a separate table, like twist my entire upper body and listen to the boys and take notes. And then when I would say something, I'd have to travel back over and lean into the microphone.
Should install a tram system in her home to get from one to the other.
Yeah, and then I would flip pages on the floor so that it wouldn't pick up the microphone because I was trying to be so quiet.
It works a lot better now that you're just using a permanent marker on a sheet. Like, that's much quieter.
Oh, so felty.
That was something that Kim and I talked about, the difference being at the table versus being remote. Because when we were remote, we would show up early and we would just each be in our closets and like hang out on the chat. And then the boys would join and we'd see them like at the table. And so she got here and she was like, this room is a lot smaller in person. And I was like, yeah, for some reason, like seeing them on camera, like what you don't see, you just imagine there's a lot more space.
Yeah, it's a wide angle lens and I have the fisheye turned on. So it looks like we're in a mansion.
Okay, this question is for everyone. If you are at liberty to tell us, what playbooks will everyone be playing next season?
Oh, no, man.
I'm not at liberty to say.
I've turned off.
Why did we include the question?
I didn't want anyone to think that her question was skipped or missed. But I've just...
Oh, man. What a shutdown. Yeah, so anyway, suck it. Next question.
Next question.
I, for one, am 100% at liberty to say.
But I refuse.
I have really enjoyed the speculation as to the playbook that I will be playing, but I can't say anything more than that. I've just really liked watching people talk about it.
We should just like say playbooks from like some random fucking game that don't make any sense.
I'll be the one to break the secrecy. I'm playing the cobbler.
Not
like a shoemaker.
Yeah. You're the one trying to get cobbler dominancy.
I'm the jellyfish.
Nice.
I'm the pop filter.
Oh, buddy.
Taz is like, I'm not playing this.
This is a weird one for me to ask. What prompted the timing of when Kim joined at the end of the season?
I think you're going to have to wait until season 4 to get that answer. Like, the big thing about bringing new people in is you don't want to just be like, okay, and here's another person. Like, there's got to be a good, strong reason in the story, because I want to make sure that anyone that gets added into the story, one, has a dynamic entrance. They have a moment that is unique for them, and like that it's different than anyone else's reason for being here. And I'm excited for people to hear season 4, because Megan talked before about how there was this element of her not knowing what was going on, and we almost had kind of a little bit of a recap in the episodes for listeners as things happened, because she was asking questions. And we don't know a whole lot about Kim just yet, but we do know that she is there waiting in the moment when you all arrive in the future. So obviously this is someone who knows some stuff. Yeah, it really was just, it was a matter of the right time that fit into the story where a character was needed and added something.
Yeah, I think for just a little behind the scenes timeline stuff. So I was cast in Crit Show Studios around February 19, but just for Perilous Tides and for bonus stuff and streams and things like that. And I think it was about a year, because I don't think you talked to me about the possibility of me joining Coin until February 2020 was around when you and I finally talked about it. And it was very much like, hey, there's this, you know, depending on how the rest of the season goes, because again, who knows? Because we were having this conversation in February about episodes that were going to come out in May. There's a possibility that you might join in season 4. Let's talk about what that would be. And so it was a lot of Rev and I talking back and forth about what sort of character I might play or the situations in which they might meet me. Mm-hmm. And we bounced a lot of ideas back and forth before we settled on the one that we ended up going with.
Yeah, because, you know, you don't know when you start the season where the season is going to go and end. But, and I think I've said this before, that for the most part, I think for all the seasons, 7 or 8 episodes out from the end of the season, I have a pretty good sense of what everyone is trying to do and where I think it's going to go. And so then being able to like, okay, let's do a little groundwork here in these last few episodes to establish her entrance in this instance.
Yeah, so I think it was about like 3 months between Rev and I having the initial conversation of, I think you might be joining Coin, to me finally recording dialogue for that, for the season 3 finale. I think I did that around the beginning of May.
Yeah. I know this isn't season 3 specific, but as a trans listener, I have a question. Are there any NPCs that have been introduced that are transgender or non-binary? Yeah, from season 3, 00 Serum is non-binary, and from season 1, Nat is transgender.
One last question. This is for everybody. If you could have literally anyone guest star on the show, who would your dream guest star be?
It might be, because I was just talking about him like 2 days ago. I still think it's a good answer. I don't know if it's ultimate, but I feel like Elijah would be real fun to play RPGs with.
My answer has changed. I think right now, because of how I could work it into the story, it would be Shia LaBeouf.
Oh my God.
Like, if I could have him as a guest.
I've given multiple answers to this question multiple times in the past, so I think I'm just going to keep changing it every time to cast as wide of a net as possible.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that hopefully just only the mention with their name in it gets to each of these celebrities, and then maybe kind of we'll get each one of them one at a time. If you are one of the people I named in a prior episode, don't stop listening now, because I'm going to talk about you, of course, obviously. I was going to say Dave Bautista for some reason.
All right.
Like, Dave Bautista knows what Dave Bautista wants and, like, won't take any shit, it seems.
Yeah.
Like, that would be fun. That would be a fun energy to have.
The way you said that made it sound like he refers to himself in the third person.
Oh, yeah. If you think for a second that Dave Bautista does not refer to Dave Bautista as, at least as Bautista.
It just sounds Bautista? Like you are being him right now.
I know.
I don't know. It's just people I want to hang out with, like Bill Hader. Bill Hader, come be on our show. I would love that day.
That'd be good.
Or like John Mulaney. I don't know. There's so many. Patrick Stewart, come be on our show.
I wondered if a non-SNL writer was going to come up on this list. There's just so many.
Conan O'Brien, come hang out.
Patrick Stewart season as an SNL writer.
Oh, shit. All right, that is our final question for the season 3 Q&A. Do any of you at the table have any questions about season 3?
Can we get Seth Green on?
For season 3, no, it's over, Tess.
Dang it.
Yeah.
I can't figure out how to explain this to you. It's over.
People can't be in things that already
What
are.
About season 2?
I'm going to take him out of here.
Yeah, okay.
Kim, get in his chair.
Yeah.
Come on, buddy.
Finally.
Let's get this guy out of here. He's had a long day. He needs a nap. Stay tuned for the season 4 teaser, and we'll see you next week for the beginning of season 4.
Clark Duke.
Greg Clark.
Michael Clark Duncan.
Clark Barr. We are in the remains of a once great city. Tall towers and gleaming buildings replaced with piles of rubble and hulking hollow husks. Smoke and ash fill the air, but in the light cast by a nearby blaze, we can make out a figure kneeling in the street. His white hair, pinstriped suit, and thin glasses are all coated in a layer of grime and char. As we get closer to him, we can see that he is cradling a young woman in his arms. She isn't breathing. The whites of her eyes are filled with red blotches, and her blue hair shifts gently in the breeze. He knows he could bring her back. Simply rewind the space she now occupies an hour, maybe two, and pull her into the now. But that won't fix anything. They'll keep coming. Now that the first strike has happened, they'll be emboldened. The world he saw in his dreams is gone. It wasn't supposed to be this way. We pan back as he gently lowers her to the ground and stands, lifting his gaze to take in the scene around him. All those hard decisions, those decades of ceaseless work, and this is what he has to show for it. But his eyes drift back down to her, and in this moment he realizes it is not the destruction of his perfect world or the collapse of his careful and meticulous plans that have hurt him so. It is the loss of her. He knows this world was never meant to be his. He wanted to leave it behind for her and all those like her. Suddenly in the distance we can hear footfalls, gunfire, and the voices of men getting closer. His eyes dart in the direction of the voices, and then his gaze softens. But perhaps it's not too late. He quickly kneels and pulls an ornate dagger from a sheath at his ankle. He slowly spins in place, drawing a shallow circle around him with the blade of the dagger. He then scratches a dozen runes around the circle and pauses, his brow furrowing, as he makes a handful of minor adjustments to each of the runes. Satisfied with the changes, he slices the palm of his hand and presses it to the inside of the circle. He looks up towards the unmoving woman one last time. I will set this right. This is not the world you will inherit. Shouting from the men as they spot him in the street and begin to open fire. He speaks a series of words which ring out loud over the gunfire, and in a burst of energy, he is gone. But the burst of energy doesn't stop at the edge of the circle. It flows out, rippling over everything and everyone in the area. And as the ripple passes over the soldiers and the fires and the broken buildings, they are replaced with a lively, bustling city, not all of its inhabitants human-looking. Some of them fly through the air on gossamer wings. Others pass through walls as they take the most direct route to their destination. In the bright light of day, with all of the sound and movement of the city, we pull back into the mouth of an alley, and there is a ripple in the air. Then a spark of electricity and the sound of radio static, and a man tumbles from the rippling air, and then the alley is quiet once more. He is dressed in mismatched clothing, a rebreather over his mouth and goggles covering his eyes. He quickly stands and pulls back the sleeve of his jacket to reveal a metal clockwork arm. He checks a series of gauges on the underside of the wrist and pulls the rebreather off. I did it. I'm home. He takes a step out of the alley and pulls his goggles up, examining the scene before him. Oh, this is new. But having been a stranger in many strange lands already, he only allows himself a moment to gawk before he pulls the goggles back down, pulls a hood up over his head, and steps out of the alley, disappearing into the crowd of the bustling city.
The Crit Show is a Crit Show Studios production, edited and produced by Brandon Wentz, with music by Jake Purley. You can find more information about us at thecritshowpodcast.com. To keep up to date with upcoming live shows, contests, and other special events, follow us at The Crit Show on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. For even more weekly content, join us at patreon.com/thecritshow.
The Fable and Folly Network, where fiction producers flourish.
In the alley, the scent is stronger, overpowering. As I watch, the overhead lamps flicker and wink out one by one. God damn it. No. The girl appears briefly under the last streetlight, the headphones snug against her ears, the Walkman clasped to her hip. She's oblivious as she walks, lost in her own world.
Hey, stop! I need to talk to you!
Then she's swallowed up by the darkness again.
Helen! Wait a second!
It strikes her in the gloom so fast she barely has time to scream. She falls into the edge of the lamplight and lies there, bleeding, motionless. The man's skin is scaly, flaking, and there are patches of soot on his cheeks. He stares at me with eyes like midnight. Eyes that are devoid of remorse, devoid of humanity. He's one of them. I turn and run, and I don't look back.
The Road of Shadows, a new mystery and suspense audio drama by Mark R. Healy, creator of The Strata. Listen now at theroadofshadows.com.